Okay, the Andy Finn Show is back, and on this date in history, October 6th, the Yom Kippur War began in 1973 when Syria and Egypt attacked Israel. Whoo, that was a mistake, but they know that now. And in 1967, and I don't understand this one, the hippies of Haight-Ashbury threw a funeral to mark the end of hippies. 67? I mean, it strikes me that we didn't have our summer of love until 68, when Scott McKenzie sang, if you're going to San Francisco, please bring some dope, or whatever he sang. But 67, the death of hippies, I didn't know about hippies in 67, I don't think. That's about when I learned about them. You know, I was in high school, but I thought the peak was, 65 to 75 or something. So I guess the reports of their death were greatly exaggerated. In any case, let me move on to the urban legend of the week before we cover Bush's nominee for the Supreme Court. This is an email that has been circulating just recently. Again, it came out in 2004, but it's circulating recently. And it is about the Swiffer wet jet. It's the idea that it poses a danger to your pets. And here's a short version of what the email says. I recently had a neighbor who had their 5-year-old had to have their 5-year-old German Shepherd dog put down due to liver failure. The dog was completely healthy until a few weeks ago, so they had a test done. The liver levels were unbelievable. Well, that might be true. Unbelievable, it sounds like. That's what urban legends are based on. As if the dog had ingested poison of some kind. The dog is kept inside, and when he's outside, someone's with him, so he didn't get it there, is the short version of this. My neighbor started going through all the household items. When he got to the Swiffer wet jet, he noticed in very tiny print a warning which stated may be harmful to small children and animals. He called the company to ask what the contents were and was astounded to find out that antifreeze is one of the ingredients. You know how it is. As soon as you hear someone is pro-freeze, we go to antifreeze. That's just the way people are. Actually, he was told that it's a compound that was one molecule away from antifreeze, it says in parentheses. Therefore, just by the dog walking on the floor, cleaned with the solution, and then licking its own paws, the dog eating from its dishes, which were kept on the floor, it ingested enough of the solution to destroy its liver. Also, his two housekeeper's cats died of liver failure just shortly after that. They both used the Swiffer wet jet, et cetera, et cetera. So there are any number of mistakes in this, but suffice it to say, to begin with, it ain't true. Of course, you'll notice this message had no name on it. It didn't say who they were, where they lived, or anything, so nobody could check up on it. And these things tend to be secondhand, that is, you always hear, I recently had a neighbor. Nobody says it happened to them, right? That's a second clue that it's an urban legend. What's wrong here is, A, that there is no antifreeze in the Swiffer wet jet or a compound that's one molecule away. This is not an uncommon urban legend. That is, alarmist stories where they tell you to look at the ingredients. Well, most people don't look at the ingredients, and if you do, you may get fooled. So it turns out that if you look at Procter & Gamble's website about the cleaning fluid for the Swiffer wet jet, it has in it a compound called propylene glycol N-propyl ether. Now, there's a similar name to the components of antifreeze, but they are not one molecule away. And besides, even if they are, it turns out one molecule away is a world away. Think of a compound of hydrogen, H2, and then H2O. When you combine it with oxygen, suddenly you're all wet. So the next thing is that the warning message that was supposedly found stated may be harmful to small children or animal. Well, you can go to the store and look at a Swiffer wet jet and the cleaning fluid, and it does not say it may be harmful to small children and animal. What it does say is avoid accidents, keep out of the reach of children and pets, as do almost all household cleaning products because that's a good idea. Plus, it's in large typeface, not small typeface, that phrase. Also, if you go on to the Procter & Gamble website, they will tell you all these kinds of things and tell you that it's not dangerous and this urban legend is going on about this. Also, if you go to the ASPCA's website, they will tell you that there's no truth to this and this widely distributed email is a hoax. Oh, the other thing is that it turns out that liver failure isn't even one of the side effects of consuming antifreeze. It's a different organ that fails, and I forget which one it is. Let me just summarize by saying this rumor is not true, and the Swiffer wet jet is of no danger. But there are plenty of other warnings out there like this, that this or that compound will cause trouble. There's one about shampoo. And it takes a common ingredient that is in shampoo, and it is, it's in all shampoos, and claims that it's dangerous because it is similar to another compound that can be dangerous, depending on what it's mixed with. And so people make hay out of this, and the secret to this, if you are an email user, as I know all of you are, don't be fooled by any warning that says to be very, very afraid, because chances are they are pulling your leg. I can almost promise it. Let me move on to somebody else who's pulling our leg, and that is President Bush. President Bush has nominated his, brace yourself, lawyer to be not to be someone that gets an award. He has decided that the next Supreme Court justice should be someone from his inner circle. Is anybody seeing a trend here? You know, I think one of the interesting things is that the president calls on the people in his inner circle a lot. For example, he put Dick Cheney in charge of finding a running mate for him. And I like to tell the story that Cheney came back to him and said, I couldn't find anybody better than me. But in fact, I'm sure that didn't happen. I'm sure Bush said, hey, you know, Dick, I got you looking at all these different people, but gosh, you'd be as good a vice president as anybody. I mean, I listen to everything you say and I do what you say. How would I get used to doing it with somebody else? Well, it isn't quite like that. I suspect that Bush was his own man and told Cheney, I want you. But the principle is the same. He has gone again to his inner circle. And of course, for his cabinet, he went to his inner circle. First, he went to the old Bush 41 cronies, right? Rumsfeld, Cheney, Powell, Rice are all out of that first administration. But in addition, if you look at who's in the cabinet now, Rice has been promoted to Secretary of State. Alberto Gonzalez, his other lawyer, was promoted to Attorney General because he did such a fine job declaring that the Geneva Conventions were obsolete and quaint and old-fashioned. But now we've got Harriet Myers, 60-year-old, unassuming, first personal lawyer, and then his White House counsel. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time, this segment and another segment, on Harriet Myers and what the conservatives and the liberals are saying about her. So let me start a little bit with her history. She graduated from Southern Methodist Law School in 1970. She was a clerk for a district judge for a couple of years, and then she was the first woman hired at a famous Dallas law firm by the name of Locke Purnell in 1972, and she worked for them until about 1991. By 85, she was the first female president of the Dallas Bar Association. She spent one term on the Dallas City Council starting in 1989. She became president of the Texas Bar Association in 1992. And then she started working with George W. Bush. In 1994, she was general counsel for the transition team of Bush was transitioning to take over at the Texas State House. And in 1995, he appointed her chairwoman of the Texas Lottery Commission. That was a six-year term. I don't think she stayed 6 years. And then she became president of the Locke Purnell Law Firm that had about 200 lawyers, and she was the first woman president there. And she became a co-managing partner of a law firm double that size when Locke Purnell merged with another law firm in Houston. And then in 2001, she was appointed White House Staff Secretary in the Bush administration. Now, Staff Secretary doesn't sound very impressive, but basically she clears all the papers that the president sees. So it really does take a good lawyer to do all this. And in 2003, she was promoted to be the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. And then this year, she became the counsel to the president, which is the job that Alberto Gonzalez had had. So that's a short version of her resume. Let me go back now and talk a little bit about her and about what's been said about her. So Bush announced this Monday morning, as I mentioned earlier. He announced this at 8 a.m., which is kind of a weird time to make an announcement like this, especially since the John Roberts era was kicking off at 9 a.m. The Supreme Court opened its session, as it always does, on the first Monday of October, October 3rd in this case, and opened it at 9 a.m., and Bush beats him to the punch and announces a new Supreme Court nominee an hour beforehand. I guess maybe he wanted to be able to say that however long this takes to get her on the court, he can say, well, I nominated her before this session of the Supreme Court even opened. I don't know what the rush was. You thought you might let John Roberts have his moment in the sun before you do that. But in any case, the criticism started almost immediately. Nobody knows much about Harriet Myers. She hasn't written much, and she's never been a judge. Now, there's nothing wrong with not having been a judge. We've had any number of Supreme Court justices, some very capable ones, who were never a judge before they were appointed to the Supreme Court. So it isn't that that's a huge problem. But the reaction from conservatives in particular made it sound like it is because she's an unknown quantity. Well, liberals feel the same way, that she's an unknown quantity, but it's interesting that the people who are kicking are the people on the right, primarily, because she's clearly a conservative. Their issue is, we think she may not be conservative enough. How can we be sure? And to me, there's a certain arrogance in that, but let me go on with the story. So by Tuesday morning, George W. Bush had to hold a press conference. Now, he hasn't held a press conference in months, and he's only held, I think, 9 before this one, in all the time he's been president. He's holding more press conferences than any president, certainly in my lifetime. I don't know if it's fewer press conferences than any president in history, but certainly fewer than any I've ever seen. And he held a press conference Tuesday morning because he needed to shore up his support for her with conservatives. And so he went out of his way to say a few things that ought to worry liberals, frankly, because he's trying to reassure the conservative base that, trust me, she'll be radical enough for you guys. I know you want to pick a fight with the Democrats, but I don't want to. He didn't say all this, right? This is the subtext. And we'll get to that in a minute. But let me hold off on Bush's press conference a minute to give a little bit more background here. The bottom line is that conservatives feel that, hey, we put Bush in office not once, but twice. The first election may have been 50-50, but we won this one decisively. Apparently 51-48 is considered decisive these days. And of course, the vote for Bush was more about Iraq and national security than it was about we want conservative Supreme Court justices. But nevertheless, the conservatives have been waiting a long time to, quote, recapture the court. And so from their point of view, they deserve this, and Bush should name a bona fide conservative. He should name an ideologue conservative to fill this slot so that we can start getting some things changed around on the Supreme Court. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about why Republicans are dissatisfied and why they're worried that this conservative won't be conservative enough.